This podcast is Entail Enhanced. To see pictures, articles, and links of what's being discussed, download the Entail app.
Welcome back to my podcast, What Would the Aunties Say? Season 2. We had such an incredible first season, which I want to thank you all so much for tuning into. It was amazing. But this season, we're diving deeper and really getting the auntie saris in a twist. In this episode, we're discussing gender roles and if the aunties are anti-feminist, plus so, so much more. Today, I have Harsharan, one of the founders of the popular Instagram page, The Indian Feminist. They have been smashing the patriarchy, one post at a time, and have been able to educate a community of over 300,000 people on what true feminism is, which I believe is something the aunties have forgotten how to be over the years. I wanted to start off as well just by understanding exactly what your definition of a feminist is.
Yeah, so interesting question, because a lot of people have different ideas of what feminism is, and sometimes that can affect how they portray themselves, if they think they're a feminist or not. But ultimately, a feminist is someone who wants equality between everyone, essentially, but it has a female focus, because historically females have been, or women have been, economically or financially, socially oppressed. Feminism is just about uplifting women and bringing them to the same level as everyone else, or as men, essentially.
For me, feminism is like, I take parts of it. I don't know, because I feel like a lot of women, some people choose to be the full way feminist, and some people, like myself, I have parts of feminism where I'm like, okay, I believe that women should have a choice to do what they want, or women should be able to be free. And, yes, men shouldn't sort of have the upper hand and all of that kind of thing. But then at the same time, I have certain other views where I'm like, oh, I like being the woman and sometimes playing a womanly role. But then I'm like, oh my God, am I being like anti-feminist? But I don't know. Like, there's just so many ways of looking at it.
Yeah, I think the way that you put it is right. Ultimately, that feminism is allowing for choice. So whether you choose to be, more feminine, or, kind of more masculine, or if you choose to be a housewife rather than being oppressed and forced to be a housewife. So I think that's the difference.
Okay, cool. That's made me feel loads better. But what does it mean to be an Indian feminist?
I think, when Simran and I first came up with that name, the Indian Feminist, like in 2016, it was primarily because we were Indian.
Yeah.
But, as you grow older and you become more aware of the world, and you start to realize, like, what does it mean to be Indian? Like, is it Indian in the context of what India is now, like in this period of time, or what India was like before partition, like this whole subcontinent of India? Because like some of my family, like a lot of them are from Pakistan, and then some are from India, like because Punjab was split. So I guess for us, in the Indian feminist is someone that encapsulates South Asian women. I think that's what we try to portray on our page.
Yeah, and you definitely do. You do a great job of it.
Thank you. try.
Yeah, no, you do. And you share really sort of honest and raw, real messages and posts and just things that need to be addressed and spoken about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think for too long we've gone through generations of sweeping things under the rug or not talking about it openly. And Instagram, or it's a great platform to talk about things openly.
What actually like sparked the desire to start a page on this topic particularly?
So I think like Simran and I have been friends for quite a long time, like I think like 10 or so years. We met randomly at the Godblotter, and I was wearing a band t-shirt, like Slipknot. It's like a heavy metal band. And in New Zealand, it's a very, back then it was like a very small Indian community, and then here you have this like Punjabi kid that's wearing like band t-shirts. It was I was very different. But someone came up to me and she's like, oh my God, she's like, you listen to Slipknot? I listen to Slipknot too. And I think, you know, from that moment, you kind of think that you're the only one that does that or goes through those things. So as the years went on, we like talked about different topics and different things we were seeing in our families, like, you know, gender roles, or, you know, we were hearing of dowry and now extended family, or like honor killings and stuff. So the more we talked about it, the more we kind of wanted to do something. So yeah, so then someone was like, oh, we should create a page. And then I was like, yeah, we should. So yeah, that's how the Indian Feminist came to be.
Love that. And I love that you guys have sort of built a relationship on like on just something you have in common, and like not feeling so alone, because this is the whole purpose and reason why I do this podcast even, is because I feel so alone in some of the things that I experience. And then I'm like, well, if I feel alone in it, there must be so many other like young brown girls that are like, oh, is this just me? And it's actually really interesting that you said about the like other feminist pages being like white women and stuff like that. And I personally feel like, obviously, people sort of being pro-feminism in all sorts of cultures, backgrounds, ethnicities. But to be Indian and fighting for feminism, I think are two sort of different things, because I feel like the misogyny can be a way worse. And we see a lot more. I don't know. I feel like, yeah, we just see a lot more in terms of gender roles, favoritism and that kind of thing. Being Indian, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would say that I agree. And that's why, you know, we wanted to make that page, because there is that intersectionality, that because we're South Asian or because we're Indian, we're going to have different experiences to, you know, what white women experience. Not to say that, you know, like one is worse than the other, because, well, no. It is, you know, like what, yeah. We, you know, what some Indian woman faces worse, but yeah. You know, it's like a spectrum or like a pyramid. It starts somewhere and then it just gets worse and worse, like it builds upon. And then I guess just with Indian culture or South Asian culture, it's very patriarchal and it can be quite misogynistic.
Definitely. I completely agree with you. I feel like us, like young brown girls or women, are really sort of vocal about how we feel about the patriarchy and men. And we, you know, we're really sort of proactive in how we sort of deal with things. And we make sort of choices in how we want to live our lives. But it seems as though like the aunties or some of the older generation of women can sometimes come across as anti-feminist. It's almost as if they've accepted their roles as women and they sort of feed into that culture, and then they criticize the younger generation of brown women or brown girls for being independent. What do you think?
I would agree with that. And like, it's quite unfortunate that, you know, sometimes women are the gatekeepers of the patriarchy. And that's because, you know, the patriarchy or patriarchal systems aren't limited just to men. It's so ingrained in us or in our society that women play a big role in that too, you know. And then I kind of think about, you know, in terms of like the aunties, like you said, I think, you know, it becomes a habit. Those gender roles become habit, and not speaking out becomes a habit. And, you know, sometimes aunties maybe know what happens if people speak out, because, you know, the extremes can be violence or it can be abuse. I think some aunties, they can be anti-feminist or gatekeepers of the patriarchy.
Definitely. I feel like we're sort of now cleaning up their mess, almost like, or almost like it's generations of like the same sort of rubbish, and then we're here trying to break these boundaries and break through and almost sort of educate them and teach them that they can have it so much better than they do as well. But it's really, really hard because they're so like sort of fixed mindset about who they are as women and what their roles are, and it's actually quite scary to see. And they just think that they should accept less for themselves.
So true. Like sometimes it really baffles me. Like I don't know if you've seen the documentary called India's Daughter. It was about the Delhi bus rape case a few years ago.
Yes.
And what really blew me away was that the suspects, or well, they were the perpetrators, the ones who had, you know, raped the woman or like abused and killed her. Their wives were justifying their behavior and were saying, you know, that she shouldn't have been on the bus that late, or she shouldn't have been wearing those clothes. And it just kind of goes to show you that how habitual or how ingrained the patriarchy or that mindset is, that you know, as a woman, you are saying these kind of things and justifying rape or murder against another woman. Like, it just really baffles me. But that's just how ingrained it is.
Yeah. And I know this probably isn't even as extreme, well, it's not as extreme as rape and killings, but even things like when a daughter is married into the family and then they'll instantly sort of blame the new daughter-in-law for, let's say their son now is changing, or he's developing himself. Maybe he's wanting to do other things. Maybe he wants to move out of the family house, and all of a sudden it's her fault, or like she's done something to him, and it's like black magic, or do you know what I mean?
Or she's like removing the son from the family, and she's the one that's pulling the family apart.
Right, exactly. And yeah, I'm not going to say that, like, there are some people out there that do want to sort of separate, and it does happen, but you can't, like, I feel like a lot of Indian aunties or Asian families go in with the mindset that she is going to do something wrong, or if something happens, it's her fault. Immediately, it's her fault. And wouldn't they just want to sort of hear the girl out, or take her side a little bit and just put themselves in her shoes, because they were once that daughter-in-law?
Exactly. I don't know. I think, like, you know, sometimes it comes to the fact that maybe it's because we're such a collectivist and community-based culture that, you know, traditionally we, like, nuclear families were actually larger families. Like, we'd live with our husbands, brothers, and their wives. So, like, it's like a feeling of detachment maybe that mothers feel, or it's like control that maybe, you know, they had that loss of control when they were the daughter-in-law once upon a time. So now they're trying to control in that way. Maybe, I don't know. Just, I still don't know. Really.
I don't get it. Yeah, I'm like,
no, I don't get it either.
Yeah. I was going to ask you why you think the aunties have settled into their roles as women, and, you know, they think that they should be in the kitchen, they shouldn't work, or they should be at home, which, by the way, like, for anyone listening, it's okay to be a housewife, but only if you want to be a housewife, or, you know, only if you're happy and all of that. But I feel like they come from a generation of fear, and they weren't really in the position to sort of question things or fight against things. And if they did, I feel like that was a time where, you know, yeah, they could be abused, they could be kicked out their houses and threatened and all sorts. But then what I don't understand is, even if they had a really, really small feeling in them of, you know, I want better for myself as a woman, why do they feel so sour or bitter towards the next generation of women who are trying to want better for themselves? Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And, you know, that baffles me still. Like, you know, you've been through the same experience, as you said, of, you know, growing up a woman. Or, you know, but maybe it's also because of the different experiences. Like, they grew up in India, or, you know, in a society where those gender roles played a function, because that could be because they had useless husbands, or, you know, there was just, it functioned like that. And so when we come into, you know, the Western world, there is, it's a world of possibility. And, you know, we're so lucky that we can experience that world of possibility, and that, you know, we don't, our primary role doesn't have to be a housewife if we don't want to. We're so fortunate and so privileged that we can have an education.
Yeah.
So we're more exposed to those kinds of ideas, because even going into that, it's like, I remember it was like a family member of ours, and they were talking about how they didn't really want to educate their daughter anything beyond high school, because an educated woman can be too open-minded and can be less submissive, you know?
Yes, this is what they think.
And
this...
no husband wants that. So, yes. So how can they marry their daughter off if, you know, she's not going to be submissive, if she's going to be outspoken?
It's so true. And you know what? It's made me think about how, like, some of my family have moved from India to America or the UK or to a Western country. And then they'll say, you know, when it's the son's, like, time to get married or whatever, they'll still go and do an arranged marriage and go and find a girl from India because they expect them to be more submissive, maybe less educated, and just be a yes person. And then I've seen it happen a couple of times when they've brought the girl over from India and she's just as educated or she's outspoken, or, you know, she's they'll say that she's jalak, or she's like just
is the word,
exactly.
So it's they'll label her all of these words, which, and if I'm honest with you, when I was younger, I'd be like, yeah. Like, I didn't even think that actually maybe she's just fighting for her own. She knows her worth. And just because she's come from India doesn't mean she's any less. Yeah, it's actually crazy.
That's what some of the parents think, right? And often, you know, like, I don't know if it's a generalization, but what I've seen is that when parents get their kids, or predominantly their sons, married from India, it's because their sons ain't shit, or it's to, you know, alcohol abuse or mental health issues. And then they have this idea of what girls from India are like. As you said, that they're going to be submissive and they're going to be yes women, but that's not the case anymore. Like, more and more girls and women are becoming educated in India, and they're finding their voice, or they're, you know, finding their independence, or their right for choice.
Do you know what really breaks my heart is when some families go and find a girl from India to marry their son that is clearly from the LGBTQ community, and they do it to sort of just, they're in denial, they want to cover it up, and they don't see that girl's worth to go and ruin her life, like, and his life, and your own son's life.
Yeah, like you said, you ruin two lives. Like, you're not allowing your son to live their authentic life, and, you know, you're getting this girl married off to your son under a false premise or false pretense, and so you're ruining her life too. All for this, I think, you know, sometimes it boils down to that whole lokiki gange, or, you know, lokiake, what will people say?
Yeah, definitely. But what I struggle to understand is that, like, as a woman, as an auntie, like, how could you not put yourself in that girl's shoes and try and relate, and just to cover up what will people say, and, you know, your sort of reputation and your image? It just blows my mind. But how do you think it affects the sort of next generation of women? Do you think that some young brown women believe that they too need to fit into what is expected of a woman, and, like, not to speak up, not to use their voice, not to break boundaries? Because I personally feel like, even though we have a lot of young brown women being really proactive and, you know, fighting for feminism, I still feel that a lot of young brown women, because they've seen their mums or aunties in these roles, they too feel like, well, no, I should be the person that stays at home, or I should be cooking. And no, it doesn't matter if he can't cook. Like, these are life skills. Of course he should cook. He doesn't need to put on flipping gourmet meals for you every night, but he should be able to manage and look after
something. Yeah,
exactly. And what do you think?
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. I think we see a lot of the dichotomy in beliefs on, like, you know, the comment section of some of the posts that we post, or even our DMs. And, you know, it's kind of what you'd expect. And definitely there are brown girls, like, our age or younger, around that age, who do know that right of choice. But there are some that feel the pressure, or don't feel like they have a choice, because sometimes enacting that choice or resisting in that way could mean losing your family.
Mm.
And, you know, that's that's a very big thing, because, you know, all humans have a sense of belonging and they want to belong to their family. And, you know, it can be quite devastating to think about losing your family in that way by choosing yourself, because it is choosing yourself and, you know, what's best for your life. And sometimes your parents won't accept that. And so maybe, you know, some brown girls, they feel like they've made that choice that they want their family rather than their freedom or a restricted freedom.
How do you have both? Is there a way to have both?
I don't know. I think that maybe you can have some of your freedoms, or, you know, like, yeah, I don't know if you can have both. I think ultimately it's one or the other, or you hide aspects of your freedom from your parents, perhaps, or you know, like, I know that I definitely struggle with it sometimes. Like, my parents aren't as liberal as I would want them to be, and there are some things that I don't tell them because I know that I know the reaction that I'm going to get. So sometimes it's for your own safety that you don't tell them. And there are some things over years that I have just talked with my mom about and talked and talked, and she's, it's slowly, you know, opened her mind up a bit. But you know, old habits die hard. You know, they're from a very different generation, and sometimes that's just unfortunately how it is, you know.
I can relate to you so much, because I try and sort of try and educate my mum or my parents on certain things and certain topics, and I'm very much like, no, girls should be able to do this, and no, like, don't speak about girls like this, and blah blah blah. And I'm like, they're like always ready to fight on these sorts of topics, but then at the same time I feel like, just to almost sometimes keep the peace, you know, you end up just kind of not doing what they want, but you don't live as freely as you want.
You would want to.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, yeah, like you said, it is about sometimes keeping the peace or knowing which battles to fight. Which is sad, really, because, you know, that's not how you would want to live your life. I think maybe from an understanding that your parents are probably never going to have the same perspective as you, you know, it's like, even people our age, or some of them may think that gender roles are fine, and that, you know, that that's how it should be, because that's their perspective, or that's their level of, you know, awareness or perspective, or what they've been ingrained with, you know. And that's maybe how they'll continue living their lives, which is fine, I guess.
Yeah, I find it so challenging, because, like, I come from a home where my mum does everything, and, you know, I'm sure so many people can relate. And yes, my dad goes to work, and we're really grateful for everything. But at the same time, my mom goes to work in the same hours, comes home, cooks, cleans, does everything else, makes sure everything else is done, and is doing 10 times the job. And yeah, I find it really, really challenging to watch and to see that, you know, she does all of this and it sort of doesn't get any help. And then I see my sisters are both married, and my brother, he just recently got married. And my brother is a really domesticated guy. Like, he will help around the kitchen. He does cook, he does all of that. And my dad finds that really sort of uncomfortable to watch, that I don't like my son doing all of this. And we're just like, no.
Doing that.
I don't think so.
Because their life skills, really.
Yeah, exactly. And we sort of always torment my dad to be like, well, how would you ever look after yourself? Like, what if we were not here? Or what if something, you know, you need to be able to fry an egg. You need to be able to make dal or something.
Yeah, how are you going to feed yourself if something, you know, happens? Like, if you guys aren't there all of a sudden.
Yeah, and like, my two brother-in-laws are, you know, really, I mean, this is how I see normal men. This is what men should do, which is they help out. They help with the kids, they cook as well. Everything is really balanced. This is how I see things. And I think my, like, if for example, my brother-in-law sends a picture of, like, dinner that he's made for my sister in our family group, And then my dad will be like, oh, and it might be a joke, but still, I don't like it. He'll be like, oh, don't make it too good. Otherwise, you'll always have to make it. And it's like, no, what do you mean? Why wouldn't you want your daughter to be spoiled and, you know, for her man to be doing all of this for her? Like, what? He's just made a normal dinner. It's not, it's Tuesday night. Like, he should be making dinner.
Isn't it funny that, like, you know, the bar is so low that we think it's so incredible when
yes.
our husbands or our partners cook or that they clean, like, wow, like, mind blowing. And we, and like, the bar is so low that we think that that's not normal, because essentially it's not the norm, but you know, that
like,
they should be praised for helping out with the kids, or but it's their kids, you know,
it's their kids, right? Exactly. And it's crazy because, you know, I hear my mum make comments to her friends on the phone, and she's like, oh, my son-in-law's so good, like, he does this with the kids, or he you know, makes food, and oh, they're so good. And I'm like, no, they are. I know that my brother-in-laws aren't doing it for praise, and I know that my brother-in-laws are doing it because they feel like they should. But it's crazy how I can hear the praise from my mum, and I'm like, he should change their nappy. It's his child. Like, we don't need to reward them for that.
It's his kid, yeah.
Yeah. It's actually crazy. It's so true. The bar is
quite
low.
Like, imagine if we did that. Yeah, like, imagine if we did that for our daughters, or on that same level. It's like how we were talking about some fathers not playing much of a role in their family. So sometimes, you know, there's that whole first daughter of immigrant parents syndrome, where, like, if your dad doesn't really do much else, you have to do everything else. So and then if you have no brothers, then there's that whole notion of, oh, she's like, she does so much and does everything that a son would do. She's like a son.
Yes.
And then we think that that's praise, but it's really not, because, you know, I'm not your son. I'm your daughter, and I'm doing things that your child would do, or actually what your husband should do, but I'm doing now.
Oh my God. So true. Like I said, I've got two older sisters, and the second one, so the one just before me, she used to, because there's quite an age gap between her and then my brother, who's a year younger than me, right? So because he was little, he couldn't, like, do much. But that sister of mine, she's, like, really, really strong. And, you know, she'd carry all the shopping bags. She'd do, like, all the sort of, I don't know, manly bits. And my mum would always be like, oh, my son, she's my son, my strong girl, my da-da-da. And it's like, when I think about it, I'm like, why are you calling her your son? She is your daughter that is a bad bitch. Like, she is a strong daughter. That's it.
Yeah, she's a strong daughter. She's just a daughter doing, you know, it reminds me of, like, at school, like, you know, when they would be like, oh, we need some strong boys to stack the chairs. And then there's, like, a meme about it. And, like, there's, like, a girl holding, like, 9 chairs because, you know, she's a strong boy.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably why I like lifting weights instead of, like, doing cardio or yoga, because it makes me feel strong. And it's almost like I want to compete. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And, like, I'm going to be, I love showing off to my brother, and to be like, oh, I'm lifting these weights, or, you know, I've gone and bought a whole squat rack and a bench, and it's not the girliest thing at all, but I love it because it makes me feel strong and powerful, and I don't have to be a man to be able to do these things.
It is interesting, like, how those gender roles, like, you know, when you think of weightlifting, you think manly or masculine. And when you think of yoga, you think feminine. And like, how ingrained these gender-based activities, or even like when you go to the, like, kids' clothing section, if you ever look at the clothes, and if you ever look at the slogans, what kinds of slogans are on girls' clothes and what kind of slogans are on boys' clothes? It's, like, really freaking weird. Like, how Like, it starts from such a young age.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Like, it's like, you know, the girls' clothes will be like, oh, pretty, or, you know, it'll say something on there to be like, I'm beautiful, you know, rather than like, I'm a strong girl.
And then for boys, it's like, I don't know, roar or yeah. like, strong boy or something, like, you know, weird stuff like that. But yeah, like how it starts from when like they're so young, or you ingrain these like gender-based activities or roles into children.
Yeah, it's so true. So what can young women who are raising their sons do to properly educate them? Because I feel like there's a lot that women do, I feel like there's a lot that girls do, but really we need to be educating our sons, you know, and the next generation. So yeah, what can they do?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think there are, you know, a lot of women who are raising their sons in that manner, like, because we've gone through freaking years of like telling women or girls to be this way and that way, and you must do this and must do that, and we leave the boys alone, we don't say anything to them. But it's high time that, you know, we educate our sons, because it's for their benefit. Like, how could you not equip them for life with basic skills such as, you know, cooking or cleaning, like their basic skills? So really you're doing a disservice to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at, so my cousin, she has a son and he's turning 10. Okay. And I really admire the way that she raises her son, because she raises him very similar to, you know, how you would raise a daughter, or, you know, for that comparison. You know, she makes him cook, she makes him clean, she makes him, and she explains things to him. Like things like, you know, she explained, I don't know, I think kids are getting adultified too young. Very young these days.
Yeah.
And so parents have to be on top of their game with explaining everything. So she's explained to him, you know, what a period is and what it's like to have a period, or what it means, and, you know, how girls or women, or, you know, people who have periods, what their experience is like. So that he knows. In their class, oh my God, some of the boys in his class have started watching porn at 10 years old.
What?
Which is like baffling in itself. Yeah, exactly. Like, she was telling me, and I was just like, what the hell? And so she was asking me, or she was talking to me about how she's going to go about explaining to him that porn isn't real. And it is a very exaggerated form of entertainment, and the importance of things like consent and, you know, being kind to women or girls when, you know, you're having sex or things like that. So I admire the way that she is raising her son, and she is talking to him about things that our parents would never talk to their sons about, but needed to talk to their sons about, because otherwise how are their sons going to know? Like, you know, in his friend group, that could very easily have become an echo chamber, and he could very easily think those thoughts if my cousin didn't tell him that, you know, porn is not real, or this is what periods you shouldn't, you know, engage in, boys who make fun of girls who have periods and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. You know, it just, I don't know why, but it made me think of wrestling, because wrestling isn't real. And I would just, if that was my son, I would be like, you know how wrestling isn't real and they're acting? That's what that is. That's what porn is.
Yeah, exactly. And porn can be really like very aggressive, and it can be quite violent, and it's not realistic. And, you know, I think there are a lot of problems or issues that men face, and, you know, I think porn just sets unrealistic expectations for men also, like, you know, that it's, you fantasy. Should have a big libido or like a high sex drive. Yeah, it's fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you think men today can do to be pro-feminist?
Yeah, I think a lot of men have an issue with the word feminism because of what they think feminism is. And, you know, you shouldn't base a movement on its extremes. And if you are, you're not really wanting to be a feminist, or you're not really wanting to be an ally in the first place, right? But, you know, for those men who actually genuinely do care, and there are a lot of them, and, you know, we have a lot of support on our page, or a lot of men who change their views through dialogue or are starting to change their views, or, you know, seeds being planted, which, you know, we're grateful for because it is a team effort.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, for men who want to be part of this change, I think it's important for them to call out their friends or call out their brothers or their dads or their uncles about some of the misogynistic shit that they say, you know? Because realistically, men are probably, you know, we've been harping on for years and years about X, Y, and Z to men. And it's not until men hold other men accountable,
yes,
that true change, I think, will happen.
I feel like when I speak to some men about their views on feminism, some of them feel afraid to speak up because of things like criticism or cancel culture, and they find it hard to get behind the feminist movement. What would you say to those men?
I think, you know, if you're afraid of a woman saying something to you, you speaking up or speaking out, then I don't think you're a true ally. You shouldn't be an ally because you want people to praise you or you want people to be nice to you. You should be an ally because you believe in that movement or you believe in the equality of the sexes or the equality of everyone. And, you know, it is definitely scary to speak up against other men because, you know, a lot of men, like, sometimes it's an echo chamber, and to be that person that speaks up, you can face the retaliation, or you know you can lose friends. But I mean, it's the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, if you believe
and
in
that's
something.
How you truly, yeah, exactly. And if you want to enact that change, if you want to be part of that change, if you truly believe it, then why would you have those kinds of friends around you anyway?
It's so true. What I'm just trying to see it so, also from their perspective, because sometimes, like, you know, you see a lot of women, and I've done it before in the past, and I've now changed my views on this, and I feel strongly against saying it, but you see a lot of women saying men are trash. And then, you know, these are sometimes the same women that are, you know, fighting for feminism, or they want to be treated better, even if they're not actively fighting, but they just want to be treated better by a man. They have all these expectations from a man, but then at the same time, they're posting men are trash or saying men are trash because maybe they've had a negative experience and whatnot, which is fair. But from a man's point of view and from their perspective, how can they get behind, you know, supporting the feminist movement or treating us equally when a lot of the time they are sort of insulted at the same time, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really, like, the whole men are trash thing, I think, is a really interesting phrase, and, you know, the dialogue around it is really interesting.
Yeah.
And one time I heard it explained, like, there's something along the lines of, like, you know, when you go swimming or, like, you're at a pool and one of the lifeguards, like, someone is running, right? And then the lifeguard yells out, no running around the pool. People who aren't running aren't going to be like, oh, we're not running. You automatically know that that phrase or that, you know, is aimed, or that statement is aimed at the person that's running. So, you know, in the context of, you know, men are trash, we all know that when we say, or when people say men are trash, they don't mean all men, right? They mean men specifically to that situation that they were explaining, or men who engage in that behavior. So, you know, if you know that it's not you, then what do you have to worry about, right?
Yeah, I see your point.
But I guess I can understand, you know, that it can be quite, I don't know what the word for it is, like, for men, maybe, like, people who, or men who want to support and hear that from their friends, or, you know, from people in the movement, that they can feel a bit outcasted. But like I said, if you're a true ally, that shouldn't matter to you. If you don't engage in that stuff, then it's not for you.
I try and just see it from, like, I'm trying to play, like, devil's advocate, because I can sometimes, which is probably why I stopped saying it, because there are some amazing men in my life, like, you know, my brother-in-laws, and you know, they've shown me that not all men are trash. So I feel bad and I feel guilty for saying men are trash when there are such good, because I don't want to instantly, even though they know that then they don't fit into that category, if I say that, and I know I've done it before at home, if I speak about men in this way, or like men are dogs, or my brother will instantly be like, oh, oh, like, he knows it's not him and I know it's not him, but they'll take that little bit of offense. And I just try and see it from a point of view where, imagine men constantly walking around, and I mean, and they do, and they say all women are hoes, all women are bitches or whatever, and they've got this phrase, even though we, or like me as a woman, might not fit into that, I'd be like, wait, don't paint me with the same brush. And I feel like I would then find it hard to be like, well, how am I supposed to sort of get on a level with you, relate to you, sort of stand by you, if you've sort of painted us all, and you've got this phrase that sort of paints a lot of people with the same brush? Because at the end of the day, you're still a woman, and if you're attacking one, sometimes it feels like you're attacking all. And if it feels, you know, and if you're attacking one man, it can feel like you're attacking all men. So I feel like these sorts of phrases are quite damaging, and I think it can sort of bring a bigger divide between us.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think that, like, you know, some, like, on a lot of posts that we get the whole, you know, but not all men. But, you know, like, when we talk about this kind of stuff, like, we know, everyone knows that it's not all men, but sometimes it's used as a derailing technique to take away from what the actual messaging is. Because it's not all men. Yes. It's not. But it's enough men for it to be a problem, you know. Yes. It's enough men for people to think, you know, men are trash, because, you know what, there are a lot of trash men out there, and yeah. You know, some, and like you, I'm very grateful for the men in my life, like my fiance, he's amazing, and you know, my cousin's husband, they're amazing.
Yeah,
but in the general sense, like, when I look at some of the men in other aspects of my life, they are trash. And so maybe that's what it is that, like, you know, like, we know that it's not all men, or we know that not all men are trash, but it's sometimes it's enough men for that generalization to take place, or for that phrase to be said. But I can totally understand, like, you know, from the other perspective of men who aren't trash, like, how it can feel for them. Like, I can totally understand that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's such, it's an interesting phrase, an interesting sort of topic. There's so much, like, that itself is a whole huge debate. And maybe, like, you know, it'd be really interesting to hear from a man's perspective, sort of how they feel towards that sort of phrase. But that's a conversation for another time.
Yes, definitely.
I wanted to say that your page is a source of, like, knowledge and inspiration for a lot of women and men. And I'd love to know, what do you have planned for the Indian Feminist Instagram page, and how do you hope to reach and teach more people and continue spreading your message?
I think we're very lucky that we're at a point where, like, our growth is quite organic, and it has been organic for, like, the whole time that we've been on Instagram. So we're very fortunate for that. And, you know, we've fostered a lot of connections with people, and there are a lot of great pages out there. And I mean, we have a few things in mind, like, perhaps, like, in New Zealand, we have like an Indian population, and we have brown women here, so maybe holding some type of event to showcase brown women's businesses, or women who are in positions of leadership, or who are doing, like, cool things in the community, so to highlight their work. I think that would probably be where we start, or maybe books, or, you know, but essentially at the moment we love to amplify brown women who are already doing these things, like, there's the Asian Women's Festival, so, you know, Shani is doing, like, amazing work in that area, or there's, like, incredible podcasts like yourself, or Gormal Minhas, she does an amazing podcast, and I learned so much through you guys' podcast. So, you know, sometimes it's kind of like, what can you do when there's already great people out there doing this kind of stuff? So, like, you know, using our page to amplify your voices, or the voices that are already out there.
Yeah, I love that, the idea of doing, you know, your more sort of local events and stuff like that, because small things make the biggest difference, and something like that could really sort of help and support brown women, even if it is just a small community. It's helping someone. If it helps one person, you're doing your job.
Yeah, and it's kind of run on the premise of, you know, why we started out Instagram in the first place, because we don't see, we didn't see ourselves in the Instagram pages that were around then, or like, you know, in terms of New Zealand and having an event, there are really no events for brown women that, you know, we've seen or been a part of. Like, there are like some smaller ones where, like, you know, there's vendor events or like, you know, people who are selling jewelry or mendi and stuff like that, so they have, or like candles and stuff. But, you know, if we were to have like a large scale event to showcase, you know, there are some poets in our New Zealand community or spoken word artists, you know, so encapsulating the whole brown female experience in one event, I think that would be our next step, perhaps.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I've got one final question for you, and then we're going to play a quick game.
Oh,
it's really quick.
No pressure.
What message would you send to the talking aunties or family members that are putting pressure on young girls or guys that are just trying to live their best lives?
I would probably just say that, you know, you were there once. So, you know, like, you should put yourself in these young people's shoes and let them be their authentic selves and just, you know, shut up.
Just shut up, basically.
Just shut up. Just, you know, like, live a little and fuck what people say, you know, and who the fuck cares what the community thinks. Like,
can we get that on a t-shirt, really, please? We need that on a t-shirt. That's amazing. I need to wear that to a wedding.
Oh my god, yes.
Wedding. Imagine.
Oh my god, too many shit talking aunties there sometimes.
Yep, it's true. It's so true. I love that message. Right, I'm gonna play a quick word association game with you. I'm gonna say a word, and you are going to say the first word that comes to your mind, okay?
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, aunties.
Shut up.
Burfi.
Gulab jamun.
Ooh. Weddings.
Too big, too expensive.
Yeah. Swear word.
Love them. Regular use.
Yeah. Money.
I don't care for it.
Makeup.
Love it. Love makeup.
Yay. Family.
Everything.
Yeah. Chai.
Lactose intolerant.
Oh my god. Dogs.
Loyal.
Coronavirus.
I wish it would stop.
There we go. It's like,
yay. That's like more than one word. I don't think that's like word association. That's like sentence association.
Yeah. You literally had sentences for most of them.
Sorry.
where can everyone find you? I mean, we've spoken about your page, but please feel free to share your handle for everyone.
Yep. So our Instagram is the Indian Feminist with underscores in between each of the words. We have a website as well, where Simran sells some of her merch, and also like we have like a, I think it's like share a coffee thing, because sometimes like running this page is like, it can be a full-time job. And so, but 10% of like our profits, they go towards, like at the end of the year, we allocate them towards female run, woman run charities. So yeah. And so, yeah, we have a website, we have a Twitter, which is the Indian Feminist as well. I think that's it.
That brings us to the end of episode one. And wow, I feel like we covered so much. If you haven't already, please go and follow The Indian Feminist on Instagram. And I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to her, Sharon, for joining me today. All the way from New Zealand, by the way. It's incredible how we can be on completely different ends of the earth, but still relate on so many levels and have similar brown girl experiences. It honestly blows my mind. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And I'd like to remind you guys that there is so much more to come, not only from this podcast, but we now have What Would the Auntie Say? The book, which is actually available to pre-order right now on all your major retailers. You can actually get signed copies on Waterstones and WH Smith. But if you're listening on the Entel app, there will be direct links to where you can purchase, as well as links to anything else we've spoken about today. One more thing. Don't forget to head to the What Would the Auntie Say Instagram page and please share your thoughts on today's episode over there, as well as subscribe to my podcast, rate and review. It really does help a girl out. So thank you so, so much for listening, and I can't wait for you to join me on the next one.